Nice to meet you all. Today I'm going to report results from the ERIC experiment, Advanced Thin Ionization Calorimeter, on behalf of the ERIC collaboration. Here, Yuri already gave a pretty good introduction on cosmically in general, but let me just start off with a one-page background. As you know, cosmic rays are energetic particles from outer space that provides the direct sample of matter from outer space. Their interactions with matter and fields are the source of much of diffuse gamma rays, X-rays, radios, and so on, which are observed with various space missions, CGRO, Fermi, Chandra, etc. And in a simple picture, they are confined in a volume where they interact with the interstellar medium to produce secondary particles, and they may lose energy via ionization energy loss. They may leak out of this volume when they encounter the boundaries of the volume. Their propagation is described as the diffusion process, as discharged particles are scattered off the magnetic irregularities as they propagate through. This diffusion process can be modified with the convection when they encounter galactic wind. They may be modified with reacceleration from the interstellar medium turbulence. So the energy distribution and the abundances of these secondary particles as well as a primary cosmic rays could provide the keys to the understanding of their transport history and the distribution and nature of the their sources, astrophysical sources like pulsars or supernova remnants and so on, but also exotic sources like antimatter and dark matter, as Pierre-Georges already talked about. And the magnet spectrometers, just like Pamela, AMS or BESS and so on, have been developed and been used for the search for the annihilation products of dark matter. And these kind of experiments have been the main tool for the cosmic ray composition measurements or the elemental spectral measurements at low energies. Above the magnet spectrometers, maximum detectable rigidities, you need a different technique. Now, to extend this kind of precision composition measurements to higher energies, advanced thin ionization calorimeter was designed and developed. This utilizes calorimetry. In a calorimeter, the particle energy is deposited in the absorber via the cascades of nuclear and electromagnetic interactions. The instant particle energy is subdivided among the many secondary shower particles. In this case, you do not have the magnet to distinguish particle charge sign. So only the absolute amount of the charge is determined. Okay? Any case, in the calorimetry, the challenging issue is that as the energy that you want to measure gets higher, the instrument becomes heavier. And for us to fly this kind of instrument, you want to make it as light as possible. So to meet this conflicting requirement, the instrument had to be thin enough to be flyable, and yet advanced to be able to measure these high energy particles. So the ERIC was configured with a bismuth germanite calorimeter, about 22 radiation lengths, preceded by carbon target to force interactions. This gives you most efficient interactions for given weight. And at the top, you have silicon matrix for the charge measurement. As you see in the example simulations, as the Ford showers developed, you have also lots of vascular particles that could reach the charge detector, meaning your charge detector needs to be pixelated or segmented finely to isolate this instant particle from vascular particles. And this Instrument was the first one to implement such fine segmentation in the silicon detector for this high energy cosmic ray measurement. This instrument was not optimized for electron measurement per se. However, the BGO calorimeter is intrinsically fantastic electron detector. As you see in the beam test results, the 150 GeV electron show about 90% containment with the resolution of about 2%. Of course, the proton containment is much smaller than that at once, only 38%. Nevertheless, its energy product distribution shows the consistency with the Monte Carlo simulation. This detector is sensitive to muons, so the calibration, absolute energy calibration was done with muons. So inner crystal calibration is also done with cosmic muons. And for using the high energy showers, you could also do inter-range calibration for each crystal by comparing mid-range and low-range and high-range and mid-range the same way. You could cover wide dynamic range, which is about 10 to the 6 or so. You also have pedestals, LED flashers, and charge injector data for the in-flight cross-calibration now. Similarly, for the charge detector, you also calibrate with the cosmic ray muons. As one corrections that you need to do for this kind of experiment is temperature dependence. As you see in this pedestal data as function of time, the, you see the diurnal variation, which is due to sun angle change in Antarctica. In the other continents, you see even more variation due to day-night cycles. In any case, this correlation is clear, and then anticipating this kind of dependence, we would take pedestal data every 6 minutes, and which was used for the corrections. We also have non-interacting helium data that was collected during the flight for the in-flight calibration. Now, ATIC had four launches and had three flights. One had a balloon failure. For this kind of experiment, for those who are not familiar with the balloon, let me just give you a scale. That is, this kind of balloon is about 40 million cubic feet in volume with about 150 meter diameter, carrying about 6,000 pounds of suspended weight. So you can picture a balloon larger than a football stadium carrying weight of about three cars all the way to the top of the atmosphere, about 40 kilometers in altitude, which gives you atmospheric residual about 4 to 7 grams per centimeter squared. It's a near space environment. The silicon matrix gave excellent charge measurements, and as shown in this charge histogram, all the charges from charge 1 to ion, individual elements are clearly separated with charge resolution of about 0.2 charge unit. So for the electrons, heavy nuclei can be removed from charge information in the silicon matrix easily and clearly. The main background here is the protons, as I said earlier, because we do not have magnets to separate the charge sign. Electrons and protons look the same in charge detector. So what we do is use the calorimeter to distinguish these protons and electrons. As shown in this example, the proton showers a lot broader laterally and longer longitudinally. So use the characteristics of shower. You can distinguish them now. In this calorimeter, what you have is this totally active BGO crystals are stacked, crossed in X, Y, alternatively, so that you can image the shower three-dimensionally. All right, so this kind of, also the gamma shower is exactly the same as electrons, but there is no corresponding charge information, or charge is zero, so you can distinguish them too. In the actual analysis, of course, you can parameterize this shower characteristics. You can use RMS to describe the lateral spread and the energy deposit in each layer, or the fraction of the energy deposit in each layer, can be used. It's the longitudinal shallow profile. And by combining those two, we have a parameter called F. And if you plot this in two layers, in a close plot, you can see the electron separation from protons. Now, you have to do this multiple times, but in real analysis. But in any case, with this kind of concept in the analysis, what you can get is rejecting all but one in 5,000 protons, while keeping fairly high efficiency of 84% of electrons. The resulting electron spectrum is shown here, which was reported in journal Nature. The spectrum at low energy is pretty consistent with the conventional cosmic ray propagation model, shown with line here, from 20 GeV or so to about 100 GeV and so on. Now, above that slight deviation, and reaches a peak at about 600 GeV or so, which is pretty consistent with previous Japanese balloon-borne experiment called the PPV-VET, but not really quite consistent with their previous immersion-based experiment. Now, I mentioned already this rejection power, but there is also atmospheric secondary electron background for this kind of balloon experiment, unlike the space mission like PAMELA. That is estimated to be about 2.7% at the lowest at 100 GeV, but increasing to 12% at TeV. This one you have to subtract. Now, but this is actually infinitesimally small compared to this kind of background that you have to deal with on the ground, ground-based measure. Now, there are also atmospheric secondary gamma rays. Since you identify these gammas from the same electron-like showers in the calorimeter, this can be actually pretty good cross-check for the electron analysis algorithm. Your resulting atmospheric secondary gamma ray spectrum is shown here, which is consistent with the calculations and the previous measurements without any bumps or structure. So this gave us confidence in the electron analysis. Now, last month, Fermi Gamma Ray Space Telescope reported electron spectrum, which is more or less consistent at low energies from 20 GeV all the way to 300 GeV. Now, it may be a little bit hard to see, but these black squares are the attic data, while these red symbols represent the Fermi data. The discrepancy that you see is though at about 600 GeV, the Fermi does not see this bump or the structure that is seen in the attic. Now, the as I understand, perhaps the next speaker on Fermi can tell you more about it. But Fermi was originally designed for gamma rays up to 300 GeV, and I couldn't find much more details on the analysis to extend that electron measurements to higher energies. But what I could find was in their paper, this is a quote from Fermi paper, that the their calorimeter is much thinner than the attic calorimeter. It's about 8.6 radiation lengths. Therefore, the showers are not fully contained, and the distribution of the constructed energy is not Gaussian, but rather asymmetric, which tells me the resulting spectrum could be sensitive to the unfolding process and energy dependent. Now, and also the energy resolution is poorer than attic, which reaches to about 20%. So considering this instrumental effect, the Fermi may not be able to see the peculiar structure or the surplus that we've seen in ADI. And also the the discrepancy might be partially due to the fluctuation in the statistical fluctuation in ERIC data. Remember, the main uncertainty in ERIC is statistics, yeah, not the energy assignment or systematics in the energy resolution. Now, having said about this statistical limitation in ERIC, the data that have been reported so far was based on the first two flights, ERIC 1 and 2. We have the third flight data, ERIC 4, which is shown. Analysis is still ongoing, but preliminary results is shown for your information here. First two flight had only part of the calorimeter having 18 radiation lengths due to the weight limit of the balloon launch. For the first flight, we were able to have all VGOs reaching 22 radiation lengths, which means you have more rejection power. And so if you compare this plot that was in the Nature paper, the electron bump in the sea of proton background here is shown, and for ERIC 4 you get a lot clearer separation. Now this is factorable for lower background there, but nevertheless you still see this enhancement or excess in the electrons. And if you combine all three flight data, the significance, statistical significance beyond and above this conventional propagation model is now about 5 sigma. Now, so what could this excess electron be? We know high energy electrons can be produced in astrophysical sites, and possible candidates could be supernova remnants or parts of in the nebula and so on. And the interactions of these kind of high energy particles could produce gamma rays, X-rays, which have been actually seen as shown in this example photos. In this astrophysical sites, the high energy particles can be accelerated via charge acceleration, which could result in the injection spectrum of energy power law, which is e to the minus 2 something or so, with a cutoff at about 10 TeV and so on. And Kobayashi et al. Predicted some signatures or the structures in the electron spectrum from the electron sources, this kind of exotic astrophysical sources above a TeV or so. ERIC structure could be due to this kind of contribution. Some of you may have even better explanation here, comparing with the Kobayashi et al.'s calculation, we could not find any particular source that could fit the ERIC data. ERIC data show feature at lower energy than what was expected from Kobayashi's calculation, as shown in this plot. Now, high energy electrons, what you can think about it is that the they lose energy quite rapidly, depending on E to E square, due to the synchrotron radiation and the inverse Compton process. And using the nominal interstellar photon density and magnetic field, the expected lifetime is about 100,000 years, and the corresponding distance would be about 1 kiloparsec using the diffusion process. There are only a handful potential sources that can meet both lifetime and distance requirements here. And Kobayashi et al. Calculated, as shown in this plot, and that kind of contribution could be shown in the electron spectrum with bumps or the structure, as shown in this example. After our paper was published, a lot of papers came out to offer various explanation on our data. I will just give you some flavor with some examples. Profuma tried to use a process for the explanations as shown in this plot. Geminga process and the loop one supernova remnant was able to explain the positron content reported by PAMELA data, but extension of that to the eddic energy data, eddic energy, then the it produce kind of undershoot the eddic electron spectra. Excess could be explained with this pulsar B0355+54, but with the quite unusually high efficiency. Now, none of these pulsars could explain both PAMELA and eddic data simultaneously. Profuma also tried to use AT&T catalog of all the known pulsars and assuming injection spectrum index and diffusion coefficient, then adjusted the output energy to produce best fit for eddic data. Here, the gray areas are excluded by Hess. Oh, by the way, I should mention the high energy eddic data about rolling off at TEV seems to be pretty good agreement with the Hess data at highest energies. And the blue regions are included by PAMELA here, and the contours show the eddic fit. So in short, what it means is that unless the injection spectrum is hard, like indexed with 1.6 or 1.8 and so on, the source has to be very powerful. It, W equal 100 here means about 10 to the 50 ergs or so. Now, this is possible in principle, but perhaps not so natural. And so then question becomes, if it is a message from dark side, probably this is what prompted this meeting as well. Now, neutralinos and the Calista Klein particles can annihilate to produce E plus minus pairs, but mass branching ratio cross sections are not well defined, and basically all we can do at this stage, not knowing much about this dark matter, play with these parameters and explore the parameter space. Now, using the Calista Klein generator in Galprobe, which is one of the cosmic ray propagation model code, what we've done was using the isothermal dark matter halo model of 4 kiloparsec scale height and the local dark matter density of 0.43 GeV per centimeter cube. Calista Klein mass of 620 GeV gave reasonable fit to data. Now here, the annihilation rate is about a factor of 230 larger than what is calculated for a thermal relief dark matter particle. This is kind of a high boosting factor. A similar factor has been used to explain the high energy antimatter telescope balloon bone experiment, which reported positron excess at about 30 GeV and so on with dark matter annihilation scenario, although their case did not have enough statistics to make any conclusive remark at that time. And according to some theorists, of course, the dark matter doesn't have to be uniformly distributed. And if we happen to be right near the clump of dark matter, it's just a possibility to think about. Collis et al. Also provided a dark matter explanation. Now, in their case, the to explain the PAMELA positron enhancement, they introduced a simple power law here shown with the long dashed line, and then extrapolated this power law to the eddic energy range, assuming equal parts of E plus minus, and produced a pretty consistent result with the eddic, indicating that a single mechanism might be responsible for both PAMELA and eddic data. And they were able to explain all the data, including eddic, PAMELA, and also WMAT-Hayes data with a decay from the excited dark matter. In this case, in their scenario, I don't know if anybody is here actually did this kind of work, but In their scenario, this intermediate light boson is less than 1 GeV, so kinematically incapable of producing antiprotons. So it's consistent with the no excess or no features in antiproton data as well. And this kind of scenarios have a prediction for the gamma ray enhancement in the galactic center, which could be good cross-check for the this scenario, and it should be actually measurable for me as well as AMS. Now, I said the excess or no excess compared to the conventional cosmic ray propagation model that depends on the, or based on the existing cosmic ray data. And explain, or the interpretation of this kind of data depending on the cosmic ray background. And understanding cosmic ray background is therefore very important. And according to me, at least, extending this cosmic ray elemental spectral measurement to the highest energy particle is important. And for this purpose, we've developed cosmic ray energetics and mass, which will measure composition to PEV energy range to have even overlap with the air shower measurements. And in a series of the Antarctic balloon flights, this is ongoing experiment. And ADIC plans to have reflight, refurbished ADIC 4 instrument with a 22 radiation calorimeter, including boron doped plastic neutron detectors will be employed to improve the electron proton discrimination. This may provide a factor of 10 improvement, we hope. And eventually, I hope a space mission with a calorimeter deeper than Fermi and louder than ADIC could clarify all the excitement that we have at the moment. And in parallel, different techniques are also being explored. For example, CREST, Cosmic Ray Electron Synchrotron Telescope, which will measure multi-GeV electrons. The idea is to use the Earth magnetic field and look at the synchrotron radiation. This one is planned for the first Antarctic flight next year. And another new detector being developed is GAPS. This one is to measure low energy antideuterons. And Antarctic flight is planned for December 2010. Another magnet spectrometer, something like PAMELA, but a much larger one, which called Alpha Magnet Spectrometer, is planned for launch for the space station next year. And this will search for dark matter by measuring positrons, antiprotons, antideuterons, gammas simultaneously with a single instrument. In addition, this will also measure cosmic ray composition, not only antiparticles, but also particles to TeV energy region. So this will be a very important tool for the dark matter search. And so the stay tuned for more exciting new data. Thank you.
I was just curious about the similar background that you talked about a proton with charge exchanging to a pylon. They showed a beam sample, beam test sample that said that was not an issue. What about your detector?
Beam test was not an issue, what do you mean?
No, for them, pi zero was not an issue. The charge exchange, faking a positron was not an issue. But in your detector, is that an issue?
Pi zeros, well, okay, two different techniques there. The in magnetic spectrometer, you have rigidity as well as calorimeter. Yeah. So you can distinguish positrons. In our case, we cannot distinguish positron. We have electron plus positrons. And positron contribution is an issue, yes. And that's what we try to do with the limited instrument as much as we could. Yeah. And the background, the proton background, protons that produce pi zero and then starting showers that look like electrons. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what the rejection power that we are talking about. And 1 out of 5,000 protons would look like electrons with our analysis in our case. They were saying about 10^-5. Yeah. So they have stronger rejection power for positrons. And particularly since they are looking at lower energy, that is a lot better to that way. Additional power. Now we think we could do this again. Let's see, we have 1 to 5,000 at the moment with just a calorimeter, right? Now by having this neutron counter that we plant apply, another order of magnitude is possible. That way we could reach similar to what
I'm the famous speaker, and I wanted to make a comment before I give my talk, and it's about the 300 dB that Will was quoted in the pre-launch paper. Mm-hmm. And that's actually from gammas, and there's nothing magic that happens at 300 dB in our detector, and actually that limit for gamma comes primarily from the background rejection and not from the energy reconstruction. Mm-hmm. And you, as you might imagine, the background rejection for gamma, it's a completely different issue that the background rejection for electrons.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the reason why nobody really took the time to look in details at the issue and try and optimize the background rejection for gammas at several hundred GeV is that there's no gammas essentially out there at those energies. So even for the brightest sources, you would still get a handful of photons after 5 years of mission. So that's probably something that people will look into at the end of the mission. But that's the reason why we always quoted these 300 GeV in our launch papers.
Mm-hmm. It'll be good to know a little bit more details in the analysis you said for the high energy beta selection, particularly since your efficiency is very much energy dependent.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we can talk about that
later
in my talk.
Yeah. Thank you.
Can I just ask, you said there were atmospheric secondaries,
which
would be about 12%.
Yeah.
Is that rolled, or is it part of the?
It's a calculation you can do.
There is a calculation.
Yeah,
that's relatively precise.
And yes, it's relatively, yes. And also it's very small compared to proton background that we are worrying about mainly. But then while we have this large amount of proton background that we worry about, also the atmospheric secondary and so on, but looking at actually comparison with the Fermi data, it tells me the atmospheric secondary or the proton background estimate was pretty good. With the low energy data are consistent.
Nobody's speaking about the first step.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, because it is the first time you can think about some statistical. In three flights, you have the same.
Yeah.
It is very interesting for me to know what.
The 100 GV. Yes. That is also in Fermi. Let me go back to Fermi data. Yeah. I say in the first order. Oh, I turned this off already. Yeah. I said in the first order they are in agreement, considering all the fluctuation in the edit data. I'm not really talking about detailed the spectral index here. But nevertheless, what is showing here is compared to the propagation model that was used in Fermi paper here. Yeah, there is this flattening in Fermi data about 100 dB and so on, which is in agreement with the edit data.
From a physical point of view, this is what is the.
Let's look at it.
The meaning.
This data right here. This is
all the three flights have the same.
Right. Whether it's actually step should be or
the
gradual.
Is off.
Yeah.
Completely changing.
Nobody
speaks about this.
Right. It's whether this is the actual structure like a step or gradual gradual flattening.
Yes,
you know,
it seems a change of the slope of the.
Well, yeah, I would not really put emphasis on the step itself, but what is clear is that it changes something. It looks like either step or flattening. Yeah.
We can check at this point.
Yes.
More or less 100
right.
To 300, you can check right.
Exactly.
It's very interesting.
I'm sorry, I didn't mention Pamela in my last chart.
It's very interesting this point for me.
Right. I saw the participant list and you were going to talk before me, so I didn't bother to put Pamela in my last chart. But yes, Pamela can also. You already mentioned it. Pamela can actually confirm this energy region, explore this energy region to confirm the findings that we currently have. So again, the conclusion is the same though. It's very exciting that more new results are to come. Sure.
Okay. No more questions?